Good lord.
Yikes. That's what being up for 22 hours with kids will do for you.
Oh my god.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, Cost of Brilliance, Sacks. Ethan, you'll be happy to know that we did our mid-range episode yesterday. Mm-hmm. Or not yesterday, last week rather.
Time. What is time?
What's time? I'm a little delirious. I was up for 22 hours straight yesterday with kids on a marching band trip to Kings Island, so I'm hurting a little bit. But you'll be happy to know that we recorded our like aggro mid-range episode, and immediately I put things into practice from that episode and have been loving Cost of Brilliance and been crushing.
Cost of Brilliance in Silverquill, in Witherbloom, in Soup? What are we talking about?
Not Soup. Don't like Cost of Brilliance in Soup. I think there are infinitely better ways to draw cards, but and not even necessarily Cost of Brilliance the card, just more the idea that I am trying to, I know as the control player how I want the game to go, and I'm trying to play cards that do not fall into their plan to stop me. Like, I'm trying to not play everything we talked about in the episode last week. I've drafted some Quandrix beats, I've drafted some Witherbloom beats, I've drafted some Silverquill beats, and It's been going well for me.
My favorite streams to have on in the background when I'm working is the Rosemary Tea, very chill vibes. She was saying she was drafting many times this week what she was referring to as Quandrix Small. So like a sort of Quandrix Tempo, Cuboid Colony and the tenement, whatever, the blue 2-mana 1/1 that has increment as well. Those sort of like small creatures.
Tester of the Tangential?
Tester of the Tangential. There he is. What a guy. And I'm intrigued because I feel like we had sort of said that those kinds of decks, or I had sort of assumed, like, man, do those kinds of decks have legs? But I think if they're still doing the things of like keeping the soup decks or control decks off balance in the same way, that they definitely can. And I would like to try and dip my toes into it. So that's my goal for this week, is to try and get into some of those, I don't know, tempo, small decks, whatever. But yeah, love a Cost of Brilliance.
My experience, like, I've drafted Quandrix Small twice, as it were, I think. What we had outlined last week, it's not that kind of a thing. More what I found is that it's getting a threat that you know you're going to be able to bait your opponent into targeting and trying to have the +0/+3 hexproof trick or royal treatment up. And then blowing them out that way, and that's how you get a lot of tempo.
Interesting. Okay. And the reason that those two increment two drops are good is because like they allow you to have a thing that's going to become a threat.
Right. And it's a juicy target, and you know when they're going to be timing to try to aim it, and you hold it up, and you've already, like, those tricks get a lot better when you're pressuring your opponent with the curve out draws from that Simic deck.
Well, and also the tricks are better when it's like, okay, I don't like whatever. If you have a 5 or a 6 drop that you're trying to air quotes protect, then you're like, okay, do I play it and then fingers crossed hope I get to untap? Do I wait another turn so that I have my additional mana up for it? And both of those two drops that grow don't ask you to do that. They're just like, hey, you're going to have this off for, you know, whatever, turn 2 onwards, and then you can just have the mana up as you see fit on future turns.
Correct.
We are going to, I guess, turn the focus on ourselves. You know, a couple weeks ago, we got in our armchairs and we looked at the pros drafting and we said, you did this right, you did this wrong. And here we are, and we're going to put the lens on ourselves. We're going to do the full 45, or I guess it's 42 now with the play booster error. But we're going to look through at least one, if not two, full draft logs here today, and we're not going to be in agreement, and I think that's going to be okay. And you said for the one draft log, you were like, I think we could literally go through this like 8 times and have 8 different paths based on what you decide to do early on.
It was a very fun draft. It was juicy picks that were very close, and there's a lot of greed versus mana base versus responsibility type picks. And I think as you make different picks at different inflection points in those spots, it really shapes how your final product looks.
Yes. So I will say that this is probably going to be an easier episode for folks to follow along in YouTube land, just given the nature of how many picks to hold in your brain. But the experienced, the adventurous listeners out there, you know, follow along with just your ears, and I'm sure you'll do great too. So I'll do a little housekeeping, and then we will dive into the draft. Let's chat about the Patreon page. patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. We have some great perks over at the Patreon page. A few things we always want to shout out. One is our Discord, which is just an amazing community of like-minded limited individuals. It was really fun to dive into our watch party channel during the Pro Tour, of course, but then we've had since the Pro Tour some constructed tournaments, and it's been fun to also get to see folks piping in there talking about Christopher Larson not being allowed to play his Doomsday Excruciator deck at the Pro Tour, which I thought was funny. Anyway, so we've got some watch party stuff. We've got gameplay review. We've got what's the pick, what's the play, big picture discussions about Secrets of Strixhaven still going on when flashback formats come along. That happens in the Discord as well. It's just a great community. And moving up the reward tier rankings, we have our podcast feed where you get access to not only this episode a day early ad-free, but also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, if you want to try a little 7-day free trial, head on over to our Patreon page. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Nicholas, Joe, and Alexander. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Truly cannot say thank you enough.
Another thing I wanted to shout out, something that I've been seeing on socials, and we actually got someone to reach out to us, which I appreciated because I had wanted to shout this out anyway, and this was a good reminder. The workers at Magic the Gathering Arena have voted overwhelmingly to form a union, United Wizards of the Coast. And there's a petition you can sign to support said union, to encourage Hasbro to recognize said union. I, for one, am a very entrenched arena player, and I would love the folks working on it to be taken care of and be excited about the work that they do and not feel exploited. So I highly encourage folks to head on over and sign that petition, and we'll make sure to have a link in where you download the show to go do so.
Wow, I was thinking while you were talking about that, I was just having a conversation with, this is so totally tangential, speaking of Tester the Tangential, but I was having a conversation with my co-teacher, who also teaches band with me, he's the assistant band director, about the Jasper Teachers Union. We have a very strong teachers union because we have like near 100% membership, and he wasn't a member this year. And I was like, I really think next year that you should join the teachers union. And he was like, well, why would I do that? Like, you know, it costs like 800 some dollars to be a part of the union. And he was like, I get the benefits of the union without being a member. And I was like, yeah, but that's not a great look for us or for the band department. Like the union's negotiating raises for all of the teachers every 2 years. And like, they're getting us raises because we've got great membership. And if everybody had that attitude, we wouldn't have great membership and we wouldn't get raises. And the raises we're getting are more than the $800. Like, I think you should look at it as investing in yourself and investing in your coworkers. It was just an interesting conversation.
And
I think I've got him convinced.
Let's go.
But regardless, unions are great, and I think they do a lot of good things for the people in the unions.
Let's dive into this juicy, juicy draft log here, Ben. What do we got going on? Pack one, pick one.
Pack one, pick one is a stacked. What happened here? Did I just copy paste something? Did you do that?
Did I do that? I don't think so.
I just left clicked and all of a sudden things happened. Yeah, this is a juicy one. I think pack one, pick one quickly boils down to a few options. No commons in consideration, as is par for the course with Secrets of Strixhaven.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Sennar Unfinished Genius in the uncommon slot. Blue red for the 0/4, enters prepared, taps make a treasure when you've cast an instant or sorcery, and then comes with Wild Idea once it's prepared, which is 5 mana, tutor up an instant or sorcery. There's Snarl Song, Soup du Jour, 5 and a green sorcery, converge, make fractals equal to your converge, and gain X life. There's End of the Hunt, just for pack context, 1 and a black sorcery, target opponent exiles a creature planeswalker they control with the greatest mana value among creatures and planeswalkers they control. And then the rare, which I do think is in consideration, is Grave Researcher, 2 and a black, 3/3, at the beginning of your upkeep, surveil 1. If there are 3 or more creatures in your graveyard, it becomes prepared, and its prepare spell is reanimate.
Yeah, so for me, I would rank the cards in this pack: Snarl Song 1, Sennar Unfinished Genius 2, Grave Researcher 3, and would take Snarl Song out of this pack. I'm not a huge fan of Grave Researcher.
I like Grave Researcher quite a bit. I think it is problematic on the other side of the battlefield. I've only turned it on once myself. So, I mean, I guess that's not, I've played with it quite a bit and only turned it on once. So I guess it's not a huge vote in its favor.
But
strike that from the record, please.
Yeah, I think like the idea of this card is more exciting than the implementation of this card. The best Witherbloom decks and the best Silverquill decks are those sort of mid-rangey decks. And I think Grave Researcher more often than not is Centaur Courser in those decks.
Because they want their creatures to stay on the battlefield.
or you're just fine to like, you're trying to pressure with your three drop and trade it off. Like, I don't know. I just don't think like, do I really want to surveil creatures into the bin to turn on my reanimate? Not really. I don't know.
These are all fair questions, but sometimes it does come down late in the game and it's already on and it's a gigantic problem. It is a powerful card.
For sure.
You could convince me to take Snarl over it, though. I think regardless, though, I feel good that I made the correct pick because I was really torn between Snarl Song and Grave Researcher, largely because this is for context, this is best of one. And I had done some other best of one drafts and Soup had just not been open. Like I'd got myself in no man's land a couple of times prior to this draft. And so I was nervous. But I think if you're going to go for Soup, starting with a Snarl Song is a good way to do it.
I agree. Okay.
So pack one, pick one, you got Snarl Song. Pack one, pick two, a much flatter, weaker pack.
Yeah.
There are commons in consideration. There's Visionary's Dance, the 7-mana make 2/3/3s. There's Essence Scatter, counter target spell, creature spell, that is. There's Prismari Charm, blue, red, instant. Choose one, surveil two, draw a card, deal damage to each of two targets, and return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. I think that's the only other stuff in consideration. There's also a Royal Treatment. There's a Tester of the Tangential, but those other cards stand out to me more.
Prismari Charms deal one to each of two targets is the bane of Essence Knit Scholar's existence across the land. The Witherbloom 3-1 that brings a 1-1 just feels like such a clean answer for that card. You're right. This pack is much flatter. I think I would take Prismari Charm here. Though you could make a case for Visionary's Dance to me as well. That's the 7-mana, like make 2/3/3s and then split card, pay 2, discard it to look at the top 2, one in your hand, one into the yard. That's like kind of good in a Snarl Song deck and might be better than Prismari Charm. I've been really impressed by Visionary's Dance.
I agree. I like a Visionary's Dance quite a bit. Certainly if you have a late game piece that you're digging towards also and ways to rebuy the Visionary's Dance.
Yeah. Yeah, I had thought like, you know, I am still doing my hashtag no commons before the wheel in earnest, which is why I was like, I'll just take Prismari Charm here. But Visionary's Dance, I mean, honestly, Rubble Rouser is also in that like in that top tier of commons that could be in consideration. But when we're talking about which between Visionary's Dance, Rubble Rouser, Essence Scatter do I want to take? We're in large territory of like this pick doesn't matter. And so just take what you want, I think. I think I would ultimately land on Prismari Charm.
I took Essence Scatter, but I agree. I think the more important takeaway from this pick is that no matter what you get, it has zero weight on your draft moving forward. Like nada, none. And I've drafted a bunch. So we took the band to Kings Island yesterday and Catherine was not able to go. She had a wedding to go to in Kentucky. So I was in the theme park by myself and all I did was draft Magic all day on my phone. It was great.
Amazing.
So I played the most Magic in one setting that I have done in a long time yesterday. And I think my takeaway from the drafts was that the drafts where there's not clear direction are really hard to get out of with a good deck.
Yeah. Do you think that they're like, how do you feel like you're supposed to navigate those? Like, are you supposed to at some point recognize this is one of those drafts and I need to start taking ownership of this a little bit more and carving my lane a little bit more? Because I feel like I want to be so passive normally in Secrets of Strixhaven. Like, I'm just going to take what I think the best card is and a lane will present itself to me or I'll get to play all these powerful cards. And sometimes neither of those is true. And I wonder at what point you're supposed to recognize that that's the draft you're in and how to best get out of it.
It's hard because it's easy. It's easy in those drafts, I think, generally to set up for a late game soup deck. But there's no guarantee that you will end up a good late game soup deck because that deck is so dependent on Snarl Songs and other powerful rares that you just don't know if you're going to get the juice. Mm-hmm. The conclusion I came to was that I generally was supposed to be more proactive, more likely to be two colors, and just try to draft a tight little streamlined deck. Like that's what I was talking about at the start of the episode with our
Cost of Brilliance.
Cost of Brilliance. Like just getting into a tight deck, know how the control decks were likely to attack me, and just try to make their lives a little bit harder. And I could usually 3-3, 4-3, but I didn't always feel like there was much I could do past that. You know what I mean?
You know, at the Pro Tour or whatever, in pod, like someone's got an 0-3. And so I feel like when you've identified, like, this is a tough seat, this is a seat that's going to have a tough time getting a deck that is premium. If you can escape with a 3-3 or a 4-3, I mean, 4-3, you got your gems back. Like, you escape with a 3-3 or a 4-3 in those spots, you got to be pretty happy.
Sure. So I took Essence Scatter, but doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Pack one, pick three. See the following cards as options. There's a Terramorphic Expanse, Sir Tripa Basic. Format All-Star, Pursue the Past, Red White Sorcery, gain two life, discard a card if you do, draw two cards, and it's got flashback for two red white. There's another Essence Scatter. There's an Ajani's Response, four and a white, destroy target creature, cost three less to cast if it targets a tapped creature. In the uncommons, there's a Witherbloom Charm, black green for the instant, sack a permanent if you do, draw two cards, you gain five life, destroy target non-land permanent with mana value two or less. And there's double rares here, Great Hall, the Biblioplex, to tap for a colorless. Tap, pay a life, add a mana of any color, and you can only cast that to play instants or sorceries. And then there's also five mana. If it isn't a creature, you can turn it into a 2/4 wizard with whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, it gets +1/+0. And there's also Zephai and the Tempest. Five blue-red for the 5/7. Once during each of your turns, you can cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand without paying its mana cost.
So I think Zephai and the Tempest is largely bad, but I will say...
But it's so good when it's good.
Well, when it's really good is with Surveil Lands. Because you like it lets you sort of do a Wilderness Reclamation impression where you're getting to use the Surveil Land mana. And then if you end up being like, oh, I do want to top this spell, you just get to cast that spell for free and keep surveilling on future turns.
You're thinking too small. Have you ever... cast Zephai and the Tempest into Wisdom of the Ages for free?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I've done it many times. It's so good. Okay.
But wouldn't casting Wisdom of the Ages just have been good too? I mean, I know you're getting a free 5/7.
But oftentimes, it is possible to lose Wisdom of Ages games.
Yeah.
And the choking point is definitely... can I do enough stuff each turn to not die? And Zephai puts a 5/7 on the battlefield and then on future turns gives you like 4-7 mana also.
Yep. Yeah, that's good. Okay. So once I have Wisdom of the Ages, then I might be interested in Zephai. This feels like another pretty weak pack as far as I'm concerned. I told you before, I would take Terramorphic Expanse here. But perhaps I'm not a Great Hall of the Biblioplex believer.
Well, I would like to sell you on Great Hall of the Biblioplex.
Okay.
Because I think Terramorphic Expanse gets one type of mana. And it like it's easy to count it as five sources in your head. But once you crack it, it is only one. And frequently in the Converge decks, if you have Terramorphic Expanse, in my experience, you are like 7/7 or whatever, plus your duels, and then 1/1/1 of each basic. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Once you crack it, the other two basics are off the table, and we already have Snarl Song, which pretty heavily incentivizing us to be Converge. And I think Great Hall Biblioplex, as a true five-color land, is better in that sense. And also, sometimes those come down to who's still got punches to throw. Mm-hmm. And once the dust is settled, you can turn this into a 2/4 that does pressure. I like Great Hall of the Biblioplex a fair amount over Terramorphic Expanse.
I'm sold. I will take Great Hall of the Biblioplex here.
Pack one, pick four. Ding, 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 ding.
Ding, 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 ding.
You see a second Snarl Song, which is very nice. And there's nothing else in consideration because we started with the Snarl Song. I think if you hadn't started with the Snarl Song, this pick's kind of interesting, but it is not here. Was thrilled. Snapped up my second Snarl Song. I do have a question for you in this spot, though. Once you have two Snarl Songs, is there anything that can push you off Converge?
It was this. I was just thinking the same question to you. I was like, what would you have to see in the next four picks before the wheel that would make you go, I guess I'm not supposed to do this. Like, it would have to be...
It would have to be white rares.
What's the 3-2 first striker in Lorehold that gets back a spell? Scrollsmith?
Practiced Scrollsmith?
It would have to be like Scrollsmith, Scrollsmith, Wilton,
even,
that he'd pursue the
even
pass.
Then, I would just be playing Naya.
Just be playing Naya, exactly. Like, so the answer, I guess, is nothing.
I think largely nothing.
Yeah.
But I do think the draft presents lots of options for how you build your Converge deck past this point.
And your point is immediate. Your point about Great Hall versus Terramorphic Expanse is immediately underlined with the second Snarl Song. Like, having the second Snarl Song, you're infinitely happier having Great Hall than you are Terramorphic Expanse.
Correct. Moving on to pack one, pick five. I think a very interesting choice between Spectacle Summit as a blue-red land and Wander Off as a removal spell, 3 and a black instant, exile target creature.
Yeah, I think Wander Off is enough better than the dual land. It's interesting, like, I wonder if this dual land was green, if it was green-blue or green-black, would you feel more inclined to take it, less inclined?
Well, here's where my head's at. I think another reason this draft is good for a full 45 exercise like this is, like, right now, we know we're drafting Converge. So I think, like, there's not the weird tension sometimes of, like, well, what if we did whatever, and we have, like, three different draft routes going on.
This is a great... This is a great time. I got to do it. Great time to talk about, you know, you and I were a little bit in the dumps last week talking about, you know, the state of guild sets galore, and is Reality Fracture going to be a guild set? And people came to our rescue with some, I don't know if they were AMAs or whatever, some questions to Mark Rosewater about such a thing. And he confirmed that Reality Fracture is indeed a 10 color pair, normal 10 color pair set. He also
tried to defend Secrets of Strixhaven as a normal 10 color pair set, so I don't put any stock in that at all.
That's what I'm saying. He also confirmed that Secrets of Strixhaven may or may not have 15 viable archetypes, but the true answer about how many archetypes are viable in Secrets of Strixhaven is 6. There are 5 color pairs, and there is Converge. And I think the interesting thing about Converge is that it is an ethos, right? It is an idea of a deck, but it is not clear really what your base 2 colors are necessarily in said Converge deck. Or if you're going to have base 2 colors, maybe you're going to be 3 colors. Maybe you're going to be base 1 color. You don't agree?
No, I do agree. I just don't think the question is as interesting as you are setting it up to be. Because while the components of the deck are different time in and time out, the goal is always the same, which is, how do I not lose to aggro while going bigger than the other Converge decks?
I agree the goal is the same, but it can be made... I think it's only interesting right now, which is lucky for us because that's what we're talking about, but it's only interesting in this kind of draft because you could... like. If we were to think about this as a full 45 log and you replace Snarl Songs with 2 practiced Scrollsmiths, it's like, I'm going to be Lorehold. Drafting a Lorehold deck is a lot less interesting in terms of the decisions you'll be making versus I'm drafting a Snarl Song Converge deck, but the choices you make are really going to be varied because of, like, I don't necessarily know what that's going to look like at the end of the draft, I guess is what I'm saying. I know what pieces will be there, but I don't know what this deck is going to look like.
Correct. I agree. I think what I was trying to say, and I don't think it matters. I do hear what you're trying to say. I think I felt myself, like, push back against you because I felt like you were pitching the Converge deck as, like, oh, we get to draft Converge and it's this interesting thing. And I think the thing that I don't like about this format or like about the Converge deck in general is that there's not a lot in this format that changes the context of cards' value. Yes. Like, cards largely in this format have a static value.
Yeah, you're never, like, it's rare that you're surprised by the power of a card on the other side of the battlefield. You're like, oh, you got to do that with that? You're like, oh, you're just casting that. Cool.
Yep. Yeah. Yes. So, but I do think this pick is interesting between Spectacle Summit and Wander Off because we know we're Converge, which means that we should be envisioning what we want our ideal Converge deck to look like. And I think my ideal Converge deck is a lot more Prismari based or teamer based mm-hmm. than it is Sultai based. And so I do think you have access to a lot of removal spells throughout the course of a Converge draft. I don't think Wanderoth is that premium. It's nice to have a copy to be able to exile something that is problematic that needs to be exiled. But I think there's a real argument for Spectacle Summit here as hoping to be once I know what I am, I want to take lands aggressively. And we know we're Converge, and I know I want my ideal Converge deck to be teamer based. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a close pick.
Kind of selling me on the land. I mean, you threw my catchphrase back at me, so I kind of got a. I think that sounded that does sound good. Pretty good. Yeah, that advice sounds pretty good to me. I think I do like taking Summit here over Wanderoff.
I think I do too. I think this was my first mispick.
Okay. All right. So you took Wanderoff, but I think we think in retrospect that Spectacle Summit is the pick. I wonder if that has ripple effects. It probably does.
I'm sure it does.
Well, it immediately does. Like, you took Wanderoff, pick 5, pack 1, pick 6, there's a Feed the Swarm in the pack, which is a lot more appealing once you have Wanderoff, and a lot less appealing if you don't.
So this next pack, we took Wanderoff, and I think we'll go forward saying we have Wanderoff while acknowledging what the pinching points of not having the blue-red land are. So there's two cards, I think, in my mind in consideration here. There's a Titan's Grave, the black-green land, and there's an Elite Interceptor here for pack context, which is like mildly concerning to me when I'm drafting soup, seeing late Elite Interceptors, but there's no getting off this train. And then there's Feed the Swarm, the one in a black, destroy a creature and enchantment. You lose life equal to that permanent's mana value. I think immediately once you have Wanderoff, you're incentivized to take Feed the Swarm, but then you're not taking the black green land. And I think really what you'd like to do is take another tapped land here to go along with your Snarl Songs. Like, the removal spells are not that hard to pick up. Do you know what I mean?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, is it nice to have a buyout to enchantments with Feed the Swarm? Yes. But, like, you can get that elsewhere, too.
And it's not enchantments that you need to have the buyout to, though. It's artifacts.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, I think I like taking the land here. I think,
Feed the Swarm?
This is brushing up against my current heuristics for the format, which are just take the best card out of every pack. Don't take commons, pack one, pick one through pack one, pick 8. But when you have 2 Snarl Songs by pick 4, as you said, like, what's going to push you off of this? Not literally nothing, I think. I'm going to find a way to shoehorn into it. And so I might as well take the cards that support the premise of I'm going to be in this deck at the end of this draft. And that is taking the 2 lands back to back, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think even though Wanderoff made me want to take Feed the Swarm, and I was like, great, I'll lock up my two black spells here. I'll be base Sultai. We'll figure the mana out later. There's no real reason for me to lock into black as my secondary color. And I think the lands leave me more flexible down the road if I know I'm doing this.
I agree.
And they lock up important pieces. So I should have taken Titan's Grave there. I did take Feed the Swarm. Moving on to pack 1, pick 7. Largely doesn't matter. There's a Cost of Brilliance. There's a Royal Treatment. And a bunch of nothing.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, we're seeing a ripple effect. With Wanderoff and Feed the Swarm, I like taking Cost of Brilliance. And with the 2 lands, I much prefer taking Royal Treatment.
Sure, yeah, but neither of them matters. I don't think you're supposed to play Cost of Brilliance in a soup deck.
I agree, and you're not necessarily going to have something on. You know, the reason Cost of Brilliance is so good in the Witherbloom and the Silvercoil decks we outlined last week is because you're getting every piece of this card. You're getting the 2 cards. You're getting the +1/+1 counter on something, and bonus points. You're probably getting some Repartee triggers or Repartee triggers as well. So I think I'm with you there. I guess in the context of before we talked about pack 1, pick 4 being a like, nothing's going to push you off of this. With your route currently, I was like, I guess you could end up in like just Witherbloom with like a good mana base that supports the Snarl Songs. But I don't think that's likely to happen.
I don't think it is either, yeah. And as somebody who doesn't like Quick Study over there on the other end of this call, like,
that's
truly horrendous in a soup deck.
Heard chef. Yeah, okay.
So it took the Royal Treatment there, but that pick doesn't matter. Moving on to pack 1, pick 8, there's a choice between Zealous Lorecaster and abandoning ship for an elite interceptor, and you stay the course for sure. You take a Zealous Lorecaster, the 5 and a red 4/4, bring back an instant or sorcery card from the graveyard. I guess to your point, there is a Shopkeeper's Bane in the pack as well, which is the 2 and a green 4/2 trample. When it attacks, you gain 2 life. If you thought there was a world where you wanted to try to be straight black green, supporting the Convergence Snarl Song, you could.
I do think that's like the two paths that I see here. Once you have the second Snarl Song, is like, do you take land, Royal Treatment, Lorecaster, or do you take Black removal spell, cost of brilliance? And now you might be thinking, maybe I'm like Witherbloom mid-range with Snarl Songs as my top end. And then you would take Bane here. I think that's probably a worse position to be in than just being Correct. Very clear about what you're doing with these Snarl Songs.
Correct, yeah. And Lorecaster is nuts with Snarl Songs, so that was a good pickup there. The wheel, you get a Terra Fractal, pick 9, Stirring Honormancer, pick 10, which is the 4/5. Look at the top X, where X is the number of creatures you control. There's a land, pack 1, pick 11, thank God. White, black, tapped land, that is our second land after Great Hall of the Biblioplex. A Burrog Barrage, which is largely terrible in soup, pick 12, that's the 1 and a green fight spell. And a Hungry Graphalon, pick 13, the 3/4 reach. And a Skyreach Waypoint, the colorless land that makes something become prepared, pick 14.
With your route, I am feeling a little like, uh-oh. Like, I got these two Snarl Songs. I don't have a lot that supports said Snarl Song.
Well, that's because I didn't take the lands. I think if you have two lands, you feel great because you have the top end taken care of and you can fill the middle and the bottom out with whatever if you have a good mana base. And right now, I have a color in black that I'm not super excited to pair with green that is looking like it's shaping up to be my base color. And I also don't have fixing to support that.
I will say I'm also, not that there's any world where you could have ended up Silver Quill, but I am always worried, like in the pack we're storing Honormancer Wheels, there is also Digsite Inventory, Burrog Bane Maker, and Sneering Shade Rider. It's just like, just Silver Quill cards all the way down. And not that any of them are exciting, but it does make me nervous, like when I see that on the wheel and I'm not maximizing it, I have a feeling of like, uh-oh, am I doing something wrong?
Sure. Well, and I also think there's a world where if you pack one, pick one Grave Researcher, you take Researcher, you take Eternal Student, you take, I don't know, Burrog Bane Maker or a Johnny's Response, you spec on the Snarl Song, or maybe you even probably take Scolding Administrator in that spot. You take Wander off, you get the Interceptor, you get another Interceptor. Like, there's a world where if you start with the Grave Researcher, you end up Silver Quill in the seat.
Just end up Silver Quill, yeah. Boy, is that a snooze fest, though.
It's a snooze fest, that's for sure. This next pick is not a snooze fest. This is pack two, pick one, and you're immediately put to the test of, well, I don't have a good mana base, but I've got power. Do I want more power? Or do I want a better mana base? So there's an environmental scientist sitting here, the 1 and a green 2/2. When it enters, search your library for basic land, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. And in the rare slot, there is Ark of Hunger, 2 red-white. Whenever one or more cards leave your graveyard, this deals 1 damage to each opponent, and you gain 1 life. You can tap mill a card, play that card this turn.
I need someone in the graphic design land out there to give me a little Bilbo Baggins, why shouldn't I meme template with Ben's face and Ark of Hunger instead of the One Ring, because that's what this pick feels like to me. I saw this pick and I was like I was fist pumping that environmental scientist was in this pack. And then I clicked, what did Ben pick? And I saw the Ark of Hunger and I said, no. Like, I see what you're talking about with, like, the ceiling of the get. This is the most powerful card in the pack for sure. I am extraordinarily nervous about casting our spells.
Hear me out.
That's what I'm doing. It's a podcast, baby.
I didn't like my spot at all at the end of pack one. Like, I hated my spot at the end of pack one. I had the Lorecaster, the Honormancer Wield. I'd seen those late elite interceptors. And I already have a white black land. I have Great Hall of the Biblioplex. Your eyebrows are getting higher with each statement I'm making.
You are aware Great Hall
the audio audience.
Great Hall does not cast Ark of Hunger.
I am aware that it does not cast Ark of Hunger, but it does cast Snarl Song. So I was thinking maybe there's a world where I'm not base green and I'm more base red white because I want the red removal anyway. There's a world where I'm base red white. splashing the Snarl Songs, because I don't have any good green cards, any green cards that I am planning to play other than the Snarl Songs, and I don't really want the black cards to pair with the Snarl Songs. That was where my thought process was at, for better or for worse. I felt like Environmental Scientist was settling for like mediocre Sultai Soup, where if Arc of Hunger worked out and I was able to do what I was envisioning, my deck would be much more powerful.
Does that opinion change if you swap the two black removal spells for the two lands?
I have a blue-red land and a black-green land.
Do you feel better about taking Environmental Scientist then?
I do, weirdly. I know that's a lot of cognitive dissonance there.
If my mana base were already better, I would want more fixing. With my mana base being bad, I want a double off-color card.
But can you hear me out again?
No, but I do actually know why you are thinking that way. But yes, go ahead. So
I think if I then take the Environmental Scientist, then I'm set up to really take any powerful cards I see down the road with an actual good mana base. I don't think Environmental Scientist single-handedly gives me a good mana base in this spot, since I don't have the two lands. And I don't think it gives me a good enough mana base. Like, the deck that is Fixing and Snarl Songs as your best cards is generally not good enough to win the late game matchups, in my experience.
Right. It'll beat the mid-range decks or whatever. But
it's not going to beat the top decks, and sometimes you're still going to lose to the aggro decks.
Mm-hmm.
And so Arc of Hunger is busted.
Okay, so best case scenario when you take this Arc of Hunger, what are you envisioning? My final deck will be what?
Either base red white, splashing the Snarl Songs and other converge cards, but preferably base blue red. Like, I saw no blue in pack one. I was hoping to pick up blue this pack, splashing the Arc and splashing the Snarl Songs. I just wanted to get away from black and lock up another powerful card, and my kingdom for a Potioner's Trove at this point, like, I was trusting that the mana would work itself out.
But Environmental Scientist does that for, like, you're like, my kingdom for a Potioner's Trove. Like, if Potioner's Trove was in this pack, do you think Potioner's Trove is better than Scientist?
Yes. It's the Biblioplex Evolving Wilds discussion all over again.
But Scientist is not that much worse.
No, Scientist is great. I didn't feel like, despite feeling like Converge was open,
mm-hmm.
I saw no good green cards other than the Snarl Songs in pack one.
It's because there aren't any good green cards. Hashtag Lords of Limited, hashtag green is terrible.
I do not co-sign that take. There's the little bear of the studio's first year. Like, I saw none of that type of thing.
The little bear. All right, so we take Arc of Hunger. Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
I do show some sort of discipline / a lot of regret in the next pack. Like, this, at this point, I was reeling.
You are reeling? Yeah.
So there's a lot in consideration in this pack. There's, because of what I did with the Arc of Hunger, there's a Tome Blast, one in a red, deal two to any target, flash it back for five. There's great Quandrix cards in Proctor's Gaze, which is the two Quandrix, bounce an online permanent, search for a basic, as well as Paradox Surveyor, the 3/3 reach that lets you look at the top five and put a land or a card with X into your hand. Sliding over to the uncommons, there's also Arcane Omens chilling here. The four and a black converge, target player discards X, where X is the number of colors of mana spent to cast the spell. And then there's another copy of Zephai and the Tempest, as well as Informed Inkrite, one and a white, 2/2 Vigi. When you cast an instant sorcery spell that targets a creature, create a 1/1 Inkling with Flying.
I mean, it's just, like, I would just, I don't know what to do here. I would take Proctor's Gaze. Like, I would be on the path of just like, I'm going to be playing a basic of every type in my deck. And I've got my Scientist fetching it. I've got Proctor's Gaze fetching it. That's how I'm doing it. And I think Proctor's Gaze is like Cryptic Command, you know?
Cryptic Command. It's good. I don't think it's quite Cryptic Command good. I took Tome Blast here to settle in my base Lorehold life, and I was very tempted by Informed Inkrite, but I decided ultimately that was not where I was going to be, and that would just put something on the battlefield that my opponents could kill early with their removal.
Okay.
Pack two, pick three, you pick up an Exhibition Tidecaller, which is great. That card is one of the best endgame cards you can have in a soup deck.
That's the single blue O2 that mills 3 on Opus, and then if it's 5 or more, they mill 10.
And there's lands in these packs too. So I'm thinking just let me wheel some lands and we're home free.
Uh-huh.
Pack 2, pick 4.
And then we're home free. There'd be no then other way free. For me to be home free.
No other way for us to possibly have had a good mana base.
Jeez.
There is, so the environmental scientist pick really doesn't work out. Like if you take scientist, it's easy mode. You take scientist into Proctor's Gaze, into whatever, into another Proctor's Gaze. I think largely we should probably just stop here on this draft because the rest of the story of this draft is greed versus mana base, and I went greed every time.
There are two wolves inside of you.
Yeah. So the deck ended up very powerful.
Yeah, you get a second Ark of Hunger, pack 3, pick 1, and after all, why shouldn't I?
After all, why shouldn't I? Yeah.
And wield some arcane omens. Somehow you have 6 non-basics.
Yeah. Got double Paradox Gardens, Forum of Annuity, which is the black-white. Paradox Gardens, the blue-green. I have a red-white land, a Terramorphic Expanse. And my mana base is actually, despite looking like a dumpster fire, not atrocious. So I have 8 green sources, 9 if you count Great Hall, the Biblioplex. And I have Studious First Year to go get a basic, a copy of Shared Roots to go get a basic, and the Terramorphic Expanse. So really, I'm at like 5-ish sources of my off-color things. 8 green. And I'm really green splashing. I'm kind of base blue, too. I have 1, 2, 3, 4,
Ben,
5.
This is, kind you of six. Can't talk about this deck like, well, I'm base, whatever. Like, this is a 5-color deck in the truest sense.
But the beauty of my mana base being a true 5-color mana base is you end up with one of each thing fairly frequently.
Yeah, Converge is actually pretty easy to hit when your mana base is spread very thin. And you have Studious First Year and Shared Roots. So you're and Hydro Channeler, like you have a lot of multi-fixers as well.
Yeah, so but the deck is basically fixing Exhibition Tidehauler, double Ark of Hunger, double Snarl Song, double Arcane Omens, plus some removal spells. And it was beautiful. 7-1. I savaged people with this deck. I think I ran a little hot with my mana base, but it was popping off. I Arcane Omens people for 5 and they quit. I double Ark of Hungered people and they quit. I Snarl Song looped people and they quit. It's great.
So your takeaway is not punished.
No, my takeaway is I made several suspect picks in this draft. Starting with not taking the lands in pack 1 once I knew I was Converge. And then I stand by the Ark of Hunger pick. I think there were just some very, very unfortunate ripples from that pick.
God,
you do not stand by the Ark
I do
of
not.
Hunger pick.
I would take environmental scientists there pretty happily. But now it's time for the lens to be on me. I'll be in the spotlight here with this draft log. This is a best of 3 draft. Pack 1, pick 1. I think the only card in consideration, though I'd be curious to hear, is a mythic rare, Prismari the Inspiration. 5 blue-red for a 7/7 flyer with ward, pay 5 life, and instant and sorcery spells you cast have storm.
Yeah, that's the only card in consideration. The next best card is Master Bending Mage or something like that, which is the 2/2 mana war, and that's not even that good in this format.
Just Matter Bending Mage.
That's what I said, Matter Bending Mage.
You definitely said Master Bending, which sounds eerily similar to something else.
Matter Bending, whatever.
Yeah, there's that. There's a Lewin Exchange Student, but you're just taking the big bad Prismari.
Taking the big bad Prismari, for sure.
Pack 1, pick 2. There's a lot of cards that you could consider taking. There's 2 lands, there's Visionary's Dance, there's Unsubtle Mockery. Once we get to higher rarities, that's when the actual conversation starts. There's Impractical Joke, the single red deal 3. There's Divergent Equation, XX blue, return X target instant and or sorcery cards from your graveyard to your hand, then exile Divergent Equation. And rare in the pack is Slumbering Trudge, X and a green for a 6/6, enters with a number of stun counters on it equal to 3-X.
I think for me, this quickly boils down to Impractical Joke versus Slumbering Trudge. And I think I land on Impractical Joke. I don't like Slumbering Trudge that much.
Interesting. I find Slumbering Trudge to be a problem. Maybe it's just like the removal suite I am packing often. But because I do feel like I'm in these red decks a lot, it's really hard for me to interact favorably with a 6 toughness creature.
I mean, red doesn't, but every other color interacts favorably with it. Blue bounces it. White kills it. What?
Blue bounces it? So what? Then it's a 4-mana 6-6.
A 4-mana card getting bounced that doesn't have an ETB is an absolute disaster.
But bounced by what? I mean, like, yeah, I mean, Proctor's Gaze, like that. But Proctor's Gaze bouncing anything does not feel good for the person getting bounced.
The stupid blue card that puts it on the top of the deck, Run Behind. The bounce Surveil one lines up well against it.
I don't agree. Those all feel like Band-Aids.
Sure, but then, like, what? They're fine, but white spells kill it, black spells kill it, like, the Death Touch fight spells kill it. I think as expensive as it is without an ETB, now, sure, if you play it on turn two and it's threatening to come off the clock or whatever, I just don't think it's good enough to go into another color here. Like, to me, this goes back to what do we expect to be doing here? And with Prismari, I expect to either be Prismari or Soup. And I don't think Slumbering Trudge is that good in Soup. Like, I think Slumbering Trudge is good in beatdown decks that are trying to kill you quickly, like where you're choking your opponent's interaction or choking your opponent's removal. And I don't think a deck with Prismari is likely to end up in that spot.
Can I sell you on, if this is pack one, pick one, that Slumbering Trudge is the best card here?
Yes. You can.
Okay. That's kind of why I took it. Like, I just want to do that as much as I can. And to your point, I feel like in Practical Joke, but it's so redundant. It's very good, but there's Burst Lightning, there's Abrade, there's Tome Blast. Like,
we've got our top end locked. Like, Prismari is very good to draft either a Prismari deck or to draft a Soup deck. So I already want to, much like once we were in the spot of two Snarl Songs in the last draft, Prismari alone for me almost is enough for me to lock in, okay, I'm drafting Prismari, or okay, I'm drafting Soup. And so I don't like Trudge in either of those decks.
Yeah, maybe that's the difference, is I am not thinking, and perhaps incorrectly so, this does not feel like a card that really is making me want to wait any picks.
I don't like Trudge and Prismari in the same deck together that much.
Gotcha. That makes sense. That makes sense to me. Okay, I took Trudge in this spot, so we will advance as such. Pack one, pick three, there's a Spectacle Summit, the blue-red land. There's a Rubble Rouser, the Tuna Red 1-4, Rummager, and Exile as a Mana Dork. And a Sundering Archaic, the 6-mana, 3-3 Converge, Exile creature that can pay 2 to bottom a card from a graveyard.
Yeah, I think this is Sundering Archaic as the best card in the pack, no matter what you've done up to this point in the draft.
Agreed. Archaic in. Pack one, pick four. I think this is a pretty clear artistic process. The 3 red-red, choose one, deal 6 to a creature, deal 2 to each creature you don't control, or create a 3-3 flyer with haste. There's also a Charging Strife Knight, the 2-red 3-3 haste Rummager, and a quick study, I guess, in the commons.
I've kind of got eyes for the quick study. I have not cast many artistic processes this format, nor had it cast against me much. Have you used the deal 2 to each creature mode frequently? Yes. Like, that's worth it on the card.
I was in the trap early on in our podcasting days of any modal spell. I would be like, it's okay that I'm like paying more than I'd like for this effect because I'm getting options. That is no longer the case, I think, with modal spells. This does get the job done. For me, and I think the frequency of them is they are listed on the card in the order that
you do them. Yeah,
that I do them. It's primarily a deal 6, as I was talking about. That's a way to deal with a Trudge in red, but primarily deal 6. Sometimes you sweep up a bunch of little critters, and I think lastly is because you're just so rarely like in a position where you're beating down. But sometimes it's nice to have a 3-3 haster. I like process.
Okay.
So I took that there. Pack one, pick five. There's a Visionary's Dance, the 7-mana common that makes 2 3-3s, and a Rubble Rouser. And I would say that is it.
Yeah, I like Visionary's Dance in this spot quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Pack one, pick six. There's a Seize the Spoils, 2 red, discard a card, draw 2, make a treasure. Banishing Betrayal, the 1 blue bounce spell, and an Arcane Omens. Chilling here, 4 and a black, converge, discard spell.
Yeah, I think Arcane Omens is very high ceiling compared to these other cards, which are pretty replaceable. So I like specking on the Arcane Omens and keeping the Converge dream alive here.
Okay, that's what I took as well. So far, only difference really is the Trudge pick. And Artistic Process versus Quick Study. But maybe I sold you on the process.
No, you sold me on the process.
Pack one, pick seven. There is a Pursue the Past. There is a Seize the Spoils. There is a Blazing Fire Singer. The 2 in a red, 2/3 enters prepared, and its spell is Seething Song, 2 in a red, instant, add 5 red.
Yeah, I think this pick largely doesn't matter. The Fire Singer does go nicely with your 7 drops, so I think I would take that here, but don't have a strong feeling.
Yeah, okay, I took the Fire Singer. Pack one, pick eight. There's a Wilt in the Heat and nothing else.
Yeah, nothing else. You snap up Wilt in the Heat here for sure.
And then pack one, pick nine, I wheel a Zealous Lorecaster into an Unsubtle Mockery, into a Landscape Painter, Tackle Artist, Procrastinate, Swamp. And you would think, we're just Prismari.
That's what I think. And I certainly think that's, but you don't have to be, right? You could still be Soup. You just don't have any fixing yet. But I think you are even more heavily slanted towards...
Sir, when has having no fixing stopped anyone from drafting an Arc of Hunger in their Witherbloom deck?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying Soup's still on the menu.
Okay. Sounded like I was being told I can't draft whatever I want, even though I have no fixing.
No. I would never. What I was saying was, if you take the Impractical Joke, pack one, pick two, I think you're even more heavily slanted towards Prismari than you are. But both routes are still open to Prismari or Soup, I think.
Yeah, I think I was, I don't know if I was like just wanting to have some fun or if I was letting the Sundering Archaic and the late Arcane Omens make me feel a type of way. But I was definitely feeling like in the moment, I was feeling pulled in multiple directions. Right now, even looking at this, I'm like, I think you're just Prismari, my guy. Like, I don't think, like, it's possible that you end up in a deck where you're you can support the Converge cards and you get to play all these good top end spells, but you don't need to. Like this pick, like pack two, pick one, there's another Sundering Archaic versus a Molten Core Maestro, which is the 1 in a red 2/2 menace with Opus, gets counters, and then if the thing is 5 or more mana, you get red equal to its power. And at the time I was like, man, this is close. It's not close.
I don't think this is particularly close here, but I think a difference between my mental state at the end of pack one and your mental state at the end of pack one, no matter what happens, I'm either Prismari or I'm base Prismari Converge. And I still feel like you feel like the Converge is possibly painting with all the colors of the wind that's open to you.
Well, I'm certainly base red, but I have had like base red green Converge decks, I guess is what I'll say.
That's what I mean. I think the Trudge is getting you in trouble mentally.
It's possible. And your point about like, it's not that, like it's better when your deck cares about a 4 mana 6/6. And when your deck cares about a 4 mana 6/6 is when you're more assertive, or at least in the mid range space, not in this Soup space. And so that I buy, and that was not where my head was at. My point is just that like Slumbering Trudge is better than my low end blue. Like the only blue that I have to play is Prismari at this point.
Sure. Yes.
So that's, perfect. I guess, what I'm saying. But I hear what you're saying about Trudge not being optimal if you're trying to get the game to go long.
Yeah. But regardless, Molten Core Maestro is the pick, no matter what. But which you take correctly.
Which I take correctly. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm basically blue-red splashing a few green cards, but largely splashing them so that I can play a Sundering Archaic. But I could just build this as straight blue-red. Like, I could throw a couple Expressive Fire Dancers in there and call it good.
That would be my opinion. There's also like a couple picks in pack three where you took lands over blue-red cards because you wanted to splash the green cards. Like there's a world where you end up in a more focused blue-red deck that there's still going to be tension in your blue-red deck no matter what, because you've got the 7-drop in Prismari that you're always playing. Like there's some tension between multiple Expressive Fire Dancers and Prismari, but I think Fire Dancer is good enough throughout the game that it is fine. Like you'll have some draws where you can really pressure some people with your Fire Dancers, and you'll have some draws where you trade your Fire Dancers off with your opponent's creatures to help you get to Prismari.
I agree. I think that's how I'm going to run it for the last match. and see what's up. Like that one of the things that's been nice about this deck in best of three is like I have a second Sundering Archaic that I can bring in. And so like when they're good, I swap them in. When they're not good, I swap it out. And I do feel like I've got some play. Like I've got a run behind. If I feel like I'm playing against some fractals, I can run a Banishing Betrayal bounce spell. A card I do want to shout out that I'm running largely off the back of a conversation that happened in the Discord, but also I've had it cast against me. Return the Favor from the bone.
RTF. I've seen some RTFs in chat in the Discord.
This is the red spree spell, and its two options are an additional one mana copy target instant spell, sorcery spell, activated ability, or triggered ability. You may choose new targets for the copy. Or an additional one, change the target of target spell or ability with a single target. This card has been really good for me in this run so far. And it's kind of like, it was a card that I had written off. I had like seen it cast against me a few times. And obviously like when it's cast, it's gonna be good. You just like don't necessarily always see the times where like, is it stuck in their hand? Is it, you know, whatever, they hold it up and you do something where they can't really interact favorably. And then there were some discussions in the Discord, and I was like, I think this is a good deck to try this card out. And like, man, is it just kind of a savage blowout. There's a lot you can do with it. You know, you can double. There's a lot of ETB triggers you can just take from someone. Just the use case of, oh, you use a removal spell on my thing. No, I will change the target of that removal spell, and I'll copy it. And now I'm turning your removal spell into a 3-for-1 in my favor.
But they also have to have two creatures on the battlefield you want to kill in that sort
right,
of
thing. Not there's, necessarily this true.
This is a highly situational card, but if you hit the situations, it's extremely good. And there's lots of ways to pitch it in red when it's not good.
I think the reason I like it in this deck is like, I definitely feel like, you know, I've got Burst Lightning, Impractical Joke, Tome Blast, Prismari Charm, Essence Scatter, Abrade, Unsubtle Mockery. Boy, howdy, do I have the early game locked up. The matchups where Return the Favor is excellent is in the soup matchups. If I can copy your Wisdom of Ages.
Yeah, that checks out to me. Just looking at this deck, it's so interesting from the draft. Like, you definitely built a late game deck from that draft. And I think if you're straight Prismari, there's worlds where you lean way less late game than this.
It's just hard to do that with Prismari in the deck, isn't it? Hard to do that when you start with a 7-drop.
What you built here definitely maximizes Prismari, for sure.
Yeah.
Interesting draft.
For sure. And that's about what I have to say about this format. The drafts are interesting.
Interesting draft.
Interesting draft. I don't know. The gameplay is, it's magic, so it's fun, but there's a lot of sameness that I am not enjoying. Like, to your point about like, there's no surprises.
It feels like you can build, like there are sideways build arounds, like loot, the blue red thing that doubles your mana. Like that feels like, oh, I got to draft a loot deck. No, I got to draft a normal looking Prismari or soup deck, and loot just makes it absurdly busted. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not like you like loot changes the deck you are drafting. It just powers it way up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel that way about a lot of the things that are sideways cauldrons, like, or sideways build arounds, like the Witch's Cauldron or whatever it's called in
the Witherbloom one.
Yeah.
That card's fun.
That card is fun and is closer to a true sideways build around than loot.
Yeah. That feels like you got to work for it a little bit.
Yes. But also then still sometimes doesn't meet the power level bar for the format while you're doing the work.
Right. Yeah.
Which is another conversation entirely. But I think I played nonstop yesterday, and my takeaway for the drafts from yesterday was when you get power, it's easy to draft this format, and there's interesting decisions. The drafts where you don't see good cards early are so hard.
Maybe that's the last piece of the puzzle for us to dig into next week.
Is what to do.
Is like what can you do? How do you salvage the scrappiest of scrappy drafts?
Yeah, I like that as a topic. I know that all Magic players, not all, I don't think you actually suffer from this affliction, but I definitely do, which is like, I think a vast majority of Magic players, I will exclude you from this, just have the life view that they are intrinsically unlucky. I was feeling that so hard yesterday, which we'll leave that as a teaser for
Lords Unlimited. For Lords Unlimited. Okay, great.
And on that note, thank you as always to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our episode backlogs, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively, our merch, courtesy of TeePublic, and our Patreon page as well. All of that at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.